trumpet, he will.
It's the Skinny on Sports Podcast with Aaron Cowan.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Cowan with the Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Thursday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to the Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Get into all kinds of stuff again today. LIV Golf Tournament 2. More or less intrigued than you were for LIV Golf Round 1. Some different names that are involved than there were the first time, maybe even bigger names that are involved, but after seeing what happened the first time, did it make you more or less intrigued by what's going on the LIV Tour? Also, my favorite golfer of all time, one Fred Couples, absolutely blasted off about the LIV Golf and specific guys he called out as he was blasting off about it. You don't see him blast off about hardly anything, but man, really pointed comments, I thought, by Fred. So we'll talk about that at the end of the show with that teeing off today out in Portland, Oregon for round two of LIV Golf. NCAA football, hey, it's kind of college football time, right? You get into July, it's what you start thinking about. It's kind of the dog days of summer in baseball. It'll be the All-Star game coming up here in a few weeks or whatever, but it's kind of start time to thinking about football. So, we've had some football, college football topics the last couple days. Here's a new one. Name me a team from each conference that is most likely to make their first college football playoff appearance this season and sometime over the next 3 years. So each conference's most likely first-time rep in the playoff this year and then sometime over the next three. So that doesn't necessarily have to be the same team, right? There's a couple of spots, obviously, that are ramping up from what they've been. So this year and sometime over the next three. Who is the most likely from each conference to make a college football playoff? And then, of course, NBA free agency starting off at midnight last night. What's happened so far? There's been some pretty interesting things, I think, happen. Not necessarily with player movement just yet, but with contracts and decisions and the Thunder of one of those as well. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things, whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, stay in touch with us a couple of ways. You can log on to KADSAM.com, or you can download the Paragon app. The app's got all kinds of things. It's got three radio stations. It's got the Penny News, brand new edition of the Penny News. Hit the website at midnight Wednesday morning, and then also pick up a free copy of this week's Penny News at your favorite local newsstands, just right there at your fingertips as they've made their way out and about all throughout the area. Big Elk TV, Paragon TV, both also in the app, which means you can check out the sports during the high school football season, high school basketball season. The live streams, live video streams of those will be available there. And then also, we've got the Skinny on Sports podcast on iTunes and KADSAM.com. If you missed the show, you can go back and check that out in those two locales. Jared Atha, how are you this morning?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm just fine. You were telling me off the air you're no softball and not a lot of things happening sports-wise. Kind of boring. Around your house.
Getting stuff done, though. The night before, I walked up and down the lawn with a weed picker device and just looked for weeds to pick. I need to get my lawn some attention. And plus, it was real nice, right? Last night, not too bad either. Was in the garage, cleaning it up, sweeping it out. It just, it's kind of turned into during the softball season, okay, that's where we throw the wagon, that's where we throw the softball gear, that's where we throw the coolers, let's go inside. And so I got that all organized and a little cleaner in the garage. Yeah, it's been boring. Real boring. How about you? You're not done.
No.
You're not done.
Not until next week. Hopefully the week after.
Right.
Honestly.
Right.
But it is weird how, you know, why it's gone this week and there's no games, no practice. It is weird, like, kind of look at each other like, what are we going to do?
It's weird. Yeah.
So
I can't keep the glove off my kid's hand, though. I said, you got to chill, kiddo. I know you want to go out and you want to play catch and all that stuff, but you just got to be a kid, chill. But I get it. Being a kid is playing catch in the backyard. So I've played catch with her, but last night I said, why don't you get your sister and start playing catch? Because she just got that cast off her arm.
Right.
We need to start rehabbing that and getting her back in the groove. So I let him do that. But, you know, I prefer be on a bike, go on the playground, go swimming, you know, just take a break. So, you know, my biggest fear is burnout.
Well, yeah.
So I'm not forcing anything on her here. I just like, hey, just relax. We don't have to practice all the time. She's just 8. So we just need to take a break. And we'll get that break. You know, vacation's coming up. We got some time.
You're not taking the softball equipment on vacation?
Oh, no.
Going down and finding a cage to hit in Florida?
No. We're taking swimsuits and koozies. That's what I'm taking. She'll dig in the sand, catch critters and stuff like we did last year. So I'm looking forward to just taking a break, relaxing. And then we're going to blink and we're going to get the text message and go, okay, we're practicing over here at the field tomorrow.
And school will be here too.
School's getting here quicker than you think.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Where'd the summer go, Aaron?
I know. It feels like it's just started and it's almost over. NBA free agency started midnight last night. Not just a ton of news as far as signings. The bigger news really was kind of yesterday afternoon when the deadline for a lot of these guys to make their choice being decline player options, teams in agreeing to or declining player options. The huge news league-wide, I think, was twofold. One, of course, Kyrie had already decided that he was going to pick up his player option for $37 million. So that makes trading him a little bit more difficult for the Nets, but it also gives them a chance to actually keep him and see what that team can be. Russell Westbrook, kind of the same situation here, agreeing to pick up his player option for $47 million. It's hard to believe, you know, that he would ever not do that. But interestingly enough, another guy on that same number did exactly that, and that's James Harden. Harden declined his $47.4 million player option. And so, you know, when you first see that part of the headline, you go, oh, James Harden's available. Actually, it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like he declined that player option so that Philadelphia and him can go back to the drawing board, create a contract that's more financially flexible, or provides more financial flexibility for the Sixers in order to try to win a title this year. So it sounds like Harden's going to – he declined the player option for 47.4, but he's going to sign a one-year deal with Philly and give them all the – give both sides the opportunity to rework a deal at a different number that then gives Philly more flexibility financially to try to bolster up that roster to make a run at a title. Very, very interesting for him to do that. Then also two other of notes, and then I'll let you go. Bradley Beal declined his $36.3 or $4 million player option, so he becomes an unrestricted free agent. Starting right now. You know, he's one of those interesting guys that you've always heard kind of rumored in things here with trades, you know, at times. And then also right here in Oklahoma City, the Thunder, declined the $1.9 million team option on Lu Dort. So that makes him a restricted free agent. But also gives he and the Thunder a chance to rework a deal for more of a long-term thing. So it's kind of some notes outside of a trade that we'll talk about in a little bit. But what were your thoughts on kind of some of those moves that those guys made yesterday, or the teams in the Thunder's case have made?
Lot of interest in James Harden, what he's doing. It sounds like he is being, dare I say, a team player. And, you know, instead of chasing the dollar bills, he's understanding. It's a very mature move for him. Uncharacteristically a mature move for him. It's because I've always seen him as the kind of a guy that's just, how's he benefit himself? And this, you know, to turn down that deal, to restructure everything, to maybe get some more people and make a run at it over in Philly, is very big of him. So that was eye opening for me. I like to see that. You know, I don't want to not like James Harden. You know what I mean? So this is a step in a good direction for him. So that's cool. I know this happened not yesterday, but, you know, we've talked about Kyrie. Didn't really touch on Westbrook very much, but him opting to stay in L.A. We'll see what that means moving forward, or if L.A., do you think they try to move him, or they have discussions of, okay, let's, you know, him and LeBron, have they been in talks? I don't know. With the new coaching staff, new head coach coming in, it's like, listen, we're going to make adjustments. And maybe him choosing to stay in L.A., if they've had those discussions, will he adjust his game for where he is now in life? You know, instead of 110% where physically that's kind of pulling back, maybe he's taking a Chris Paul approach to this. And I don't know. It's interesting for me to see Westbrook staying in L.A., and I think he's always wanted to stay in L.A. That's where he's from. So I think he was going to try his best to stay right there. It's the other people around him, LeBron, the new coach, management. You know, did they sign off on that too to say, yeah, we want to keep Westbrook here?
Well, they didn't have a choice.
Right.
It's his choice. He's got $47.1 million
reasons. Yeah, and who's going
to
trade for that? Yeah, you know, well, who's going to take that on?
I think what you're seeing here with the two moves that were made by both he and Kyrie, now – the money doesn't match quite right, but with that figure, there's only so many places that can trade for him. Wood is a different question. I'm talking about just can.
Right.
Can figure out a way to make it work. And so maybe that's one of those places. You know, we talked about Kyrie yesterday and, you know, how much of a wait and see did the Nets actually do to now that he's opted in to that $36.5 million. Now, how long did the Nets, you know, we haven't seen what they're trying to do yet. Ben Simmons isn't playing basketball. Does he want to play? You know, but I think with Westbrook being there, there's just that natural talk, and it's going to happen with those two guys. If things go south in Brooklyn and things go south in L.A., what about trading each other for him and, you know, the Nets having to throw something else in there or what have you, you know? So I think that by those two guys making that choice, I think that's just going to be a natural talking point throughout the season, especially if things don't start out well in one or both of those places for one or both of those guys, being Westbrook and Kyrie. I do think it's interesting what you said about Harden and taking the team first approach with a contract, something we certainly haven't seen from him.
Yeah,
and it's also interesting that that he did it and Westbrook didn't.
Right.
Yeah, there's obviously, but I think the difference is with Harden. Harden had or has the Sixers want him. I don't know if the same thing can be said about Westbrook. If he declined that money, that option, I don't know if the same can be said about the Lakers wanting to rework a deal for him. And so, you know, I think that's going to be talked about, I promise you, today on these airwaves, is the difference between those two. But I don't think the situations are the same. I think you're talking about a guy that's the last chance he's going to have to get $47 million is this year. And then with the decline, just the way he plays the game and the lack of shooting, Westbrook's not going to command near the number that even Harden can, because Harden's game, to me, can last longer because he can shoot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could park him in the corner at 35 years old and he can still be effective on the offensive end. The same cannot be said about Westbrook at this point in his career. His game is all athleticism. And until he, you know, reworks that, and obviously it doesn't look like he's going to, then, you know, moving forward, he's not going to be near as valuable a piece as he has been in the past. Now, Thunder-wise, the team declined that $1.9 million option for Lou Dort. So now what happens? Well, he becomes a restricted free agent, which means the Thunder can match any deal that's out there. The deal for him is like 4 years, $58 million, so $14.5 million a year. I think this is an interesting situation for Oklahoma City. I don't think there's any doubt that they did what they did in order to start the dialogue about signing him to a longer-term deal. But I also think that they have – we talked about what lessons can be learned from last time, and last time being kind of building the Thunder from the ground up with Durant and Westbrook and all that. And some of those contracts – being overpaid for guys like Perkins or Robertson or whoever. You can go down the list of guys that you think were overpaid. But that keeping Oklahoma City from being able to be able to afford or be able to attract that quote-unquote final piece, whether it was Pau Gasol at times throughout that run where people talked about, will he take the, you know, oh, they don't have the full mid-level, so he can make $6.5 million in Chicago or San Antonio, you know, versus $3 million here, because of some of those. It's not because of the big contracts; it's because of the others that are thrown in there. And Lou Dort's contract is certainly going to be something along those lines, where, yeah, he's valuable, but how valuable is he? And as bad as it might stink to lose Lou Dort, this is where trying to figure out what he's going to be and what he can become and is so important for that organization, for the Thunder organization right now, to project that out and be right about it. Because if you project him out to somehow shoot, you know, 38% from three on a consistent basis over the next 4 years of a contract, then with the defense he plays and all the other things he brings to a team, you may be able to stomach $14.5 million a year. And if you get lucky and he exceeds your projections, then you've got a steal of a deal again with him, like you have for over the last couple of years. Problem is, though, if he goes the way that it feels like most of these things have gone for the Thunder, all of a sudden, now the guy can't shoot at all, and he's just a defensive player, a la Robertson. Never gets any better, and instead of that 38%, he's down at 32, and now you're going, dang, wish we'd have signed him for nine a year. You know, so it's a really interesting deal, because he has a chance, in my mind, to go from by far the best contract in the league to not the worst, just because the number isn't going to be so massive. But on the wrong side of having a good contract, for sure.
Yeah, I think it sets up both parties involved to try to get in a good situation, ultimately, right?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder what he thinks, because, you know, what is this going to be, his fourth year? I mean, that dude has been massively underpaid.
Yeah.
Over 3 years already, or 4 years already, if it's going to be his fifth. It's just, they all run together with the, especially with the lockout year. It's hard to remember. I think that was his rookie year. So he's played 20, 21, and 22. So this would be the fourth year. But, he's barely made, I mean, what has he made? $5 million, maybe, over that time? Probably not even that much. And I know everybody's out there going, oh, well, it's a poor guy. Well, I mean, but, you know, for what he was, you know, that should be 10 or 15.
Mm-hmm.
And so is he thinking, okay, I played at a discount. You're not getting no discount from me. And then what is his value to other teams? I mean, if somebody can come in here with a offer that the Thunder don't want to match because they don't have the, they don't view him in the same light value-wise as what maybe somebody else does. Or maybe somebody else thinks he has a higher ceiling. I don't know. It's going to be interesting because he's been such a luxury to have at that nothing price. Now you're going to have to start taking that, taking his offensive game into account instead of just going, ah, it doesn't matter what he shoots. Look how he plays defense. Oh, and he's costing us $800,000 this year or $1.3 million this year. You don't care. You know what I mean? Like, but now when you start making that money, then the microscope and the magnifying glass gets a lot more close to what you're doing to make sure or to think, okay, that's worth it when you know what's coming down the down the road here with all these draft picks you're going to have. And if and surely to goodness, one of them will be a good player to go with, you know, SGA. So, I mean, you can't sacrifice Giddy or maybe Chet later on just because you want to reward Lou Dort with more money than he deserves, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Right. Yeah. It's and I don't, do we think this is the only move, I guess, what we calling it, the Thunder make?
Well, I mean, they're going
to who else could be?
Muscala's gone. They didn't pick up his option.
Okay.
So, you know, he's out there. You know, there's going to have to be a way to find five guys are going to have to go.
Exactly.
Because there's 20 and not even counting Jalen Williams, Arkansas. So, you know, so there's five or six of these guys that we've seen. And you know what? Some of them might even be like, man, I don't like that. But the, here's the whole thing is, outside of SGA, Giddy, and maybe Dort, as much as we've seen some of these guys, the truth is they were still on teams. Now, albeit there's times where they, maybe they weren't trying to win, but there were guys on 21 teams. So right. If they were that good, that's not where this franchise would be. Now, I understand that's kind of both ways because of the way that what they were trying to do, which obviously worked with the second pick this year. But if they were that good.
Yeah. I see there's a reason they were on the court and not off of it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Somebody had to play. And if you're trying to lose or not trying your hardest to win, certain guys were out there and others weren't.
Right.
They didn't sit down Kenrich Williams for the rest of the year. You know, they didn't sit down Darius Bailey. You know what I'm saying?
So absolutely.
Those names that we're used to seeing, some of those are going to be gone. Muscala being the first one. J. Michael Green, we talked about, they're looking for a trade to ship him away for his good and theirs both after getting a draft pick for Denver. So, but there's going to be some names, and maybe even some of them are like, dang, I wish they wouldn't have done that. But the truth is, none of those guys have shown, maybe Kenrich Williams, maybe, but, you know, none of those guys have really, they've shown flashes, but none of them have cemented themselves so much that they're untouchable.
Of local interest, what do you think Lindy Waters' future is with OKC?
That's an interesting one. The two-way contract thing, he's signed to a two-year two-way contract, so I think, you know, I don't know how much we're going to see him with the big club. I think if you want to go watch the Blue, I think you're going to have a bunch of chances to see him there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's exactly the type of guy we're talking about. Yeah, he showed flashes down the stretch. But at the same time, you also got to take into account, okay, somebody had to shoot because they had to have five guys on the team. This isn't Hoosiers. Gene Hackman's not rolling out with four. And also, you got to take in consideration who was playing against the Thunder down the stretch on these teams that were trying to do the same thing.
Right.
So is what –
or teams that have already locked up
– locked up playoffs or trying to lose two for the lottery.
Right.
So there's a lot of – but that's what they're paid to do. It's what Presti and all that team is paid to do, is to figure out which ones are there and which ones aren't. But I think the initial reaction of, oh, my gosh, the team declined Lou Dort – I don't think that necessarily means he's gone by any stretch. I think now it gives them gives both sides the opportunity to talk about what a number is. Meanwhile, it also gives somebody else outside of the Thunder the opportunity to fire a big giant offer at him that then the Thunder have to decide whether or not they're going to match or not. That's the only thing that kind of you want to, if you're the Thunder, you want to pay him more than $1.9 million to reward him for the player that he has become. But at the same time, you take the risk of somebody else wanting to pay him whatever million, and you go, I've been here before. Is that worth it? Is it worth this for what's coming down the pike later if the guys that we think are good are going to be as good as we think they are? And so he might be one of those guys that turns out to be a casualty. All right, Jared, this is going to be fun, I think, to see where our brains are in relation to college football. So last year, two of the four members of the college football playoff, Cincinnati and Michigan, made their inaugural appearance in the tournament. So my question to you is, and I was going to say just nationwide, but then I thought, you know what, let's not do that. Let's narrow the scope down a little bit more with conferences. And so the question is, which team?
Power five conferences.
Yeah, we don't need to go in the Sun Belt.
Or the American?
Yeah, because it's kind of not going to be there anymore, right? Okay. So it's hard for me ask about three. Now,
Well, it's kind of hard with the Big 12 situation.
For this purpose, one Big 12 team, obviously it's Texas, stays in the – they don't get to go to the SEC yet because we're talking about right now.
Okay.
But that could affect your decision on who that Big 12 team is 3 years from now, maybe, if you think that that's where Texas is going to be. Anyhow, so the Power Five conferences, who is the most likely to make their first playoff appearance next year? The team from each conference next year, and then a team from each conference sometime in the next 3 years. Okay?
Okay.
So I will start with next year first.
You mean this upcoming season?
This coming season.
Okay, gotcha.
The season upcoming. What team from each conference is most likely to make their first college football playoff? I will start in the ACC.
Okay. Go ahead.
I will go with North Carolina State. Here's the deal. I don't think there is anybody that's going to make their first appearance, and that's going to be the case maybe on a bunch of this. But for me, North Carolina State is ahead of where I think the other answer is right now for next season. Devin Leary, school record in touchdown passes last year with 35. And North Carolina State also seems to be that team, like when you watch on Sunday – and you see, like, these edge rushers or defensive linemen, and you're thinking, man, I don't really remember him from college football. Where did he go to school? And then you look it up. It's amazing how many times the answer is North Carolina State.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with NC State for next year in the ACC.
That's actually my answer, too, was NC State. Because a lot of the team that will – I have a feeling we have the same team for our next 3 years. They're not ready yet. I believe Clemson has a bounce-back year and wins the ACC. Is that enough to get them in? I don't know. But NC State's going to be nipping on their heels. And if they can get over that and maybe take down Clemson and win the ACC with maybe a loss, maybe two, depending on when it happens, they got an opportunity. So I'll peg them as my ACC team that could get in this year.
Yeah, they're at Clemson on November the 1st. But other than that, man, you look at the schedule, their big out-of-conference game, they host Texas Tech. They play East Carolina in the league. They're at Clemson, at Syracuse, and finish the season at Louisville and at North Carolina. But it's an ACC schedule.
Yeah.
And so, you'd rather have that Clemson game at home, but it's not. So, that's going to be – and maybe it's a situation – golly, do you remember which – what do you call it? Divisions. They're in the same division. Okay, so they can't get away with losing to Clemson and then meeting them again in the
right.
In the
no, thing. They're in the same.
They're in the yeah. same. They're the Atlantic versus the Coastal. Still not sure. Anyway,
can we just call it the East, West, North, South,
North or South or what have you?
Because in my mind's eye, the Atlantic is on the Coastal. I'm
it
so
is
confu-
on the coast,
I'm
right?
Confused.
All right, so let's stay in this year. Okay, go to the Big Ten.
Okay.
Who do you think is the most likely this year?
Well, there's going to be two favorites that are out of the Big Ten. They're going to for the college football playoff, and they've already been there. That's Ohio State and Michigan. But teams that have always been on the cusp, can't get over it, can't get in. I will say this year, Wisconsin.
That's who I've got too. And I wanted to say Michigan State, and then remembered they made it.
Yeah.
You know.
No. Yeah.
They had already made it. So.
Yeah. But that you're right. They seem like a team that you kind of forget made it, but they got a great coach too, Michigan State.
Yeah, Mel Tucker's turned that around, huh?
Yeah, but Wisconsin's in a good – they're not in the same division as Ohio State and Michigan. They could win their division and see one of those two, and then you never know in the Big Ten championship game that could put them in.
That's exactly why I picked them for this year, because they don't – they're not Penn State, who has to play Michigan State, Michigan, and Ohio State, because they're in the East division. And so it seemed to me, with Penn State not being – maybe what they have been at times recently going into the season, and then factor in that they're in the wrong division for next year. Yeah, it came down to me, Iowa or Wisconsin, just because of where they're playing. And I went with Wisconsin. Graham Mertz, quarterback. It's not shot. They don't have the shot put quarterback anymore.
No. And they have always played solid.
And maybe he gets better as he gets a little bit older. Yeah, it's defense and then their offensive line. They're another one on Sunday. You're like, oh, yeah. On Sunday night, about three of them will say Wisconsin on the offensive line for both teams combined. So, yeah, I'm the same way. Big 12 for next year.
I will go with Texas. I mean, they have a quarterback, we think. They have a running back. They have a wide receiver. Coach, I think the report card's still out on them, but they are recruiting. And the schedule sets up nice for them. They're the one team that doesn't have a lot of question marks like the other perennial contenders in the conference. We've mentioned this all yesterday. Again, I mentioned the schedule. I know they host Alabama, but that's the second game of the year. They can survive that. And depending on how they even play Alabama, say it's close and they lose, and then they go on and they, you know, obviously win in Dallas. And if they can finally win at Kansas, they might have a chance. That was a joke. But they host Baylor late in the year, and they host Baylor, who a lot of people have as a team that could be a contender, obviously defending champs. Tough road games, seriously, are, you know, at Stillwater, and man, that might be their toughest, maybe at Kansas State. But yeah. I think Texas, if they can be truly back, they can and win the conference with maybe a loss, maybe two. I mean, shoot, I could see them surviving Alabama and Oklahoma, get to the Big 12 championship game, and getting in.
Yeah.
If other things happen that help them out in their favor. But they are a brand that the college football playoff would want to see in there, that's for sure.
There's no doubt that that's true. I went with OSU.
Okay.
Just because I think I'm not ready for Texas to be back yet. I'll see when I believe it.
I'm right there like that. I got to see it to believe it. But
and it's not just because I have my Swingin' Pete shirt on today.
But it's because of it's because of the question marks. There's not a lot of questions there in key positions for Texas. Skill position looks really good. Again, the quarterback, we'll see.
Yeah,
but
that's
the skill position around them is really good, and we'll see if their defense doesn't fold up camp.
That's the difference to me is. The question marks that are there with Sanders, we all know them. We've seen them. But they're less than there are with about anybody else in the league.
I'm just hesitant about OSU because of the defense.
There's defensive losses. There's no doubt about that. Right up the middle, too, and that's what makes it. But they do have what should be the Big 12 quarterback of the year. Probably offensive player. Well, I mean, depending on Worthy or Robinson or some of those guys. But they should have the first team Big 12 quarterback at the end of the season. And we've seen in this league that means a lot throughout the years. So I'm going to go with OSU. SEC for next year.
This one was harder for me.
I thought this was the hardest one.
Yeah, because I could probably put about three teams on this list. And I went with one, I'll say Texas A&M. I went with them. I know they play in a brutal West. What we know, I mean, despite Jimbo's off-field antics and press conferences and questionable recruiting, he can coach. He beat Alabama last year, so there's that mountain that they've climbed. Could they do it again this year? It'd be hard to do in Tuscaloosa, but I'll go with A&M. I think that they're just trying to take those next steps, and last year they were oh so close. That's going to motivate them this year. I'll put A&M as a team that I think could get in there this year. How about you?
Similar to the Big Ten, East versus West,
okay.
I went to the East in the SEC. I think A&M is the snap answer
mm-hmm.
because we've seen what they've done recruiting, but those guys are still freshmen, going to be freshmen.
Sure.
And the schedule. Golly, they go in November. They're at Mississippi State, at Alabama, at South Carolina. Now, listen, in that league, it could be harder than that.
Yeah.
Ask Arkansas. They've been going to Georgia and Alabama back-to-back, you know, whatever, and just ridiculous schedules. And so when you look at it that way, you know, they get South Carolina and Florida as their East opponents. That could be worse, too. And especially going to South Carolina and getting Florida at home, that's probably a little bit of an advantage on the schedule. But the West and the guy who's going to be the quarterback – I didn't go with them. I went with, and this is going to be shocking, I went with Kentucky.
Oh!
Playing in the East. Mark Stoops has got them on a roll like Kentucky football hasn't seen since Bear Bryant. They're two opponents from the West. I don't think you can ask for a better group. Ole Miss and Mississippi State. It's not easy, but it can be way harder.
At Ole Miss, hosting Mississippi State.
Hosting Mississippi State.
Just pulled up their
schedule. Yeah, they're at Florida and at Tennessee. That's when you think about the East, probably four teams that have a legit shot, not including South Carolina, Florida, Tennessee, Georgia, obviously, and Kentucky. So they have to go to Florida, to Tennessee, but they get Georgia at home. And Will Levis, the quarterback, is awesome. And so I don't think they can do it, but if there is a team that can kind of get on some crazy run, I'll take the guy. I'll take the team with the quarterback Will Levis and what they've been doing there over the past few years. So I'll take Kentucky. Then in the Pac, who you got next year?
Well, the Pac-12 is, let's call it what it is, probably the weakest conference, top to bottom, right now. And so what team can take advantage of that? I'm just going to go with consistency here. I'll say Utah.
That's what I've got, too. Cam Rising, the tight ends. I think the country kind of got introduced to Utah in that Rose Bowl.
Right.
That just the awesome game against Ohio State. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't watch a whole bunch of Utah football all year. Because
West Coast and
they're just they're the team that it feels like when you hear Utah, doesn't it feel like defense boring? But it's effective, right?
Yeah,
that's not the truth with that team last year. Cam Rising was in those tight ends. They've got guys all over the field. They were way more athletic and fast and entertaining. Now, maybe that's a function of playing Ohio State. Because of what they are. But, yeah, it's just, you know, Kyle Whittingham's a guy that just sets out there and cranks out 8 to 10 win seasons. And
right.
When they're really good, they might, you know, just a couple years ago, they were right there with a chance in the Pac-12 title game when Oregon got them with Justin Herbert. So, I'm with you. I think for this next year, Utah is the team. Now, fast forward, do the same exercise, but over 3 years. So in the ACC, who do you think is the most likely to make their first playoff appearance sometime in the next three, not just next season?
I'll go with Miami, the U. The NIL thing is going to be a big factor in all of my answers here, but they're obviously in a big market. They got their guy, their coach, their home guy that I think will still be there in 3 years, and he's a good coach, so in Cristobal. So I'll go with Miami.
I did too. You know what's interesting? You mentioned NIL, and I was just thinking, you know, a school that if this was 20 years ago, would be right at the, it would feel like a place that would be right at the top of the NIL conversation. That's really not.
Who's that?
Florida State.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't in the 90s, there wasn't a cooler place than Florida State.
Right.
Like they, you know, Dion and then all the Charlie Ward and then, you know, it gets to Warwick and those guys down there with Bobby Bowden being the coach the whole time. And of course, then there's the Free Shoes University and all that.
Don't forget the coolest guy of them all, Chris Winkie.
Yeah, I don't think that's it. But it's you don't really, I mean, heck, Louisville's signing dudes that are five stars right now. You know, with NIL deals, you don't hear much of Florida State. And maybe that is just one of those jobs that's it's a one coach job. Meaning there was just one coach that could really make it happen. I think we might be seeing that in the same league with Virginia Tech. There's just one coach that could really make it happen, really light it on fire, and then everyone else kind of sputters. Maybe Florida State is that because they weren't that juggernaut before Bobby Bowden got there. He created it, and they really haven't been since he left. So maybe that's maybe like the kids don't think a thing about Florida State. Well, you and I do because when we kind of grew up.
Yeah, we remember that. Yeah,
14 straight years of finishing in the top five of the AP. That's an unbelievable run that they had. But I'm with you. I'm with Miami. NIL, crystal ball. And it feels like it's kind of time for the U to cycle back up. It's kind of an every 10 to 20 years deal where they all the planets align and they shut off the southern half of Florida to everybody else and get all those guys that can play and get them all of them talked into going to the U again. So I'm with you. I think Miami is the easy, clear choice there with everything that's going on. Big Ten.
It's funny you mentioned Florida State, Virginia Tech with longtime coaches, and then after they're gone, they've never really come back. Not so much the case with Penn State, is it? They've survived the horrible stuff that happened, you know, with Joe Paul in the end of his tenure, and then moving forward with help me, who replaced him.
James Franklin. Oh, well, Bill O'Brien first,
and then, yeah. And then Franklin has kept it going. I think they're right there. I was torn between them and Iowa, but Penn State just has that survivability that I just mentioned, and I think that gives them the opportunity to, you know, they always have good recruits coming in, and they have a good coach. We'll see if he stays there. There's always rumblings every time a big job comes open that James Franklin might be tabbed to replace whoever, but he's stayed there at Penn State. So I'll put Penn State in that one.
You know what's sad?
Hmm.
Is this should be an easy answer, and it's not.
This was the hardest of them. Well, SEC was hard too, but this was one of the harder ones.
The answer to this, with where they're playing in this conference, it should be Nebraska.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
It should be Nebraska,
yeah.
But there's no way you can say that.
Mm-mm.
You know, because with what they've done in the past and the tradition that was there for all those years, the western side of that – I mean, there is no way Nebraska shouldn't be Wisconsin. And, the success that Wisconsin's had at Nebraska's expense now. I think the answer has to be Penn State.
No consideration for Iowa? Not really.
Iowa's just Iowa. You know, they're probably better every year than I think they are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just, it's Iowa. They've got those uniforms that we all know, and, you know, they got a bunch of slow guys. You know, I mean, they don't, but that's what it feels like to me.
Right.
Them in Wisconsin, are they the same team? They just switch jerseys? I don't know. They never have a real good quarterback. They never really have. Yeah,
but they go out and they just
win. They go out and win. They have normally.
It's not flashy. It's
normally
not,
play great defense.
Yeah.
But Nebraska, God, that's so sad.
It is sad.
All right, Big 12.
Big 12. This is where I put Oklahoma State because of the exodus of Oklahoma and Texas.
Okay, so
see what I'm saying?
I got you. So you're not saying Texas because you don't think they're going to be a Big 12 team.
Right. Right. That's why. And then I wonder if I could have put two teams in one, both spots.
Yes, you could. Okay. Absolutely.
But no, because of it the, can be the because same team. OSU, I think, will rule the Big 12 when OU and Texas leave. I put them there.
I put Texas just because of the recruiting they're clearly doing right now.
Sure.
The NIL that they're taking advantage of. And just because at some point they're going to be good again, maybe. SEC, who did you put there?
Now, this one was hard. This one was real hard. I had consideration for, you mentioned Kentucky. I have consideration for South Carolina. Love their coach. Love Beamer. But it's another one of those teams, those once-upon-a-time teams. Can they get back? I put Tennessee in that one, that category.
I thought about Tennessee, but I think it's clearly A&M. Because of everything going
because
on.
Because of everything
there.
Going on. Yeah. I understand.
The class they signed. I almost put them in both spots. Matter of fact, I did write them down in both spots. And then thought, next year's going to Tuscaloosa. Just the schedule, you know, and trying to find the quarterback. Maybe not yet.
I've seen enough, or I saw enough last year out of Heupel in Tennessee where I think everybody's bought in because they were on the verge of winning games. They were competitive. They weren't getting blown out. I think the administration, students, fans, and the team, they're all bought into Heupel and what he's trying to do there. So I think they're committed to him, and that's just going to get better. I praise schools that are like, we're not just going to throw you out after 2 or 3 years. They're giving him. I think they're going to give him a big opportunity to win big at Tennessee. So that's why I kind of have him there. I think he's building a program. Because everywhere he's gone, let's face it, he's been good.
Yeah.
This is his biggest job. Let's see, and I think he can still be good there, and make them better, get them back to Rocky Top.
Yeah, and they're in the East.
That and helps
so
too.
Doesn't it feel like it's going to be?
That's all why I considered South Carolina too.
Doesn't it feel like though?
For all those reasons I mentioned about the coach and the university
right
in,
and in the East, Georgia's obviously rolling, but Tennessee and then another team. Florida, you know, one of those two to me is going to be the next one to kind of seriously challenge Georgia. Kentucky, that's cute. You know, South Carolina, okay. But, you know, those are the two big boys that ought to be up there challenging Georgia. And one of them's going to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it is Tennessee before Florida.
Yep.
In the pack. Well, this is going to make everybody throw
this
up.
This is obvious, though, right? It's obvious. It's kind of the same reason for Miami and NIL situation. That's USC. They got guys coming, and we hate the guy, but he is a good offensive mind. That's Lincoln Riley, and he's going to take advantage of a weak conference unless other teams catch up with him, a la UCLA or Oregon or Utah staying on top of it there. But it's obvious. USC is the obvious answer.
Yeah, that was for sure the easiest one.
That was the easiest one.
Yeah. Wrapping it up here on a Thursday with LIV Golf.
LIV Golf.
More or less interested or intrigued with the second tournament, which is on American soil up at Portland at Pumpkin Ridge, than you were a couple of weeks ago when the thing kicked off over in England?
Less. To be quite honest with you, less.
How come?
Because new is always interesting, so we've seen it. So we saw what it was, okay, and now it's here it is again, and I think that will reflect if there's any way they're measuring ratings on a YouTube channel. I don't know, but I might have it on if I'm bored.
So nobody that has committed since the last time they played has moved the needle enough for you to be more intrigued?
Not really. I think that the thing that keeps me intrigued with PGA events, and of course, for the obvious reason, major events, is, you know, the point system, the FedEx Cup, and all that stuff. Standings, world standings. This doesn't have any effect on any of that.
Yeah, it's just money.
It's just a money grab. So it's why I'm like, okay.
Yeah, there's
now
really...
if you're a pure fan of the sport like mm-hmm. you are, and you just want to watch these guys play, sure, you're going to be interested. But for me, you know, I want to see, okay, this is going to help his standings? Is this going to, how's he going to, you know, how are they? And then it goes back to when it first, the first iteration of this was, does it affect the play with all they got to do is show up and get a paycheck? So mm-hmm. does it affect the competitiveness of the tournament, of the event? And I don't think that's been answered yet. But over time, we might see, well, look, he is going for it right there because he knows if he can get on in two and he has a chance to bird on this hole, he has a chance to be the champion of this tournament. Whereas, well, if he just lays up and he pars or bogeys, he's still getting a bigger payout than... You see what I'm saying? This, so
sure.
The competitive, the approach to the game. So, again, my answer is just not as interested as I was the first time. Wanted to see what it looked like the first time. I got my taste, and I'm like, okay.
It's interesting because at this same time of year, the John Deere's going on right now. And I don't know if it's still the case. It may be the next week's tournament, but it used to be John Deere was right before the British Open. And one of the cool things about the John Deere was if whoever won or whoever finished the highest that wasn't in got to go to the British Open. Just because they're having a great week. And then, of course, and they, like, John Deere, like, flew them over there, you know. And But that was kind of the cool mystique around that tournament specifically. And you're right. There's none of that with this. All it is, oh, that guy won $4.7 million. Second guy to do it. And the money just kind of it jades you a little bit. That doesn't – I was trying to think, like, I might try to find it and watch it just because it's something to watch and to see, you know, Matthew Wolf, how's his game?
Right.
You know, or Patrick Reed, or the stunts that maybe Bryson's out there pulling, because there's really no rules.
Now, the more interesting stuff is what's happening off the golf course. What about the press conferences? I know there's going to be a protest from families of 9/11 victims.
Right.
You know, there's this off-the-course stuff that's going to grab more headlines than who's actually leading.
And I think that's
who said what during the press conference? Who got thrown out this time?
I mean...
It is interesting. It's in America now.
I think that makes it a little bit more. Plus, I've been there.
Yeah. Okay.
And so that's kind of cool. It's not a place you see very often on TV. And I've been there up in Portland and Pumpkin Ridge on both of those courses, Ghost Creek and Witch Hollow, and which, you know, that's where one of the last of the three straight U.S. amateurs, the Tiger, won against Steve Scott, and some of the amazing shots that both those guys hit. But I think that's the only reason why, is just because it's just a personal draw for me, having been there.
I can see that.
Wanting to see him and trying to remember what the course was.
Right.
Interestingly enough, I mean, one of the coolest, one of the most laid-back dudes there's ever been out there is Fred Couples. And he has an interesting, not only being kind of a little bit older than all of these guys, obviously, but also being able to be around a bunch of these guys in the team format, of which he captained three President's Cup winning teams. So he spent a bunch of time with a lot of these guys. And he is irate about what's going on. Some quotes from an article yesterday. Like, he's the captain right now of something called the Icons. It's just you probably won't even see it on TV, but basically it's 12 athletes that are other outside of the world of golf that play golf. He's captaining that team against the same type of thing from Europe, you know, Ryder Cup style. And so that's why they were asking him about it. First quote, these guys, I mean, he's obviously PGA Tour lover.
Mm-hmm.
Totally in lockstep with what the tour is and has been. He says, these guys, have you seen their interviews, right? Have you seen Phil look so stupid in his life? They know it's a joke. Which goes back to something you've harped on about the play. And, you know, the quality of the play and the care factor of the play. So, Pat Perez was one of the guys that has joined LIV since the last time. And he was one of the only guys so far that has just flat out said, yeah, I'm doing it for the money. He kind of said, listen, I'm 46. I've done this life, the tour life, and being kind of a knock it around, you know, win maybe once or twice, but you know, also be in the back end of things, trying to struggle to stay out there. And he said, "Yeah, I'm doing it for the money, you know, like at the twilight of my career, whatever." But Freddie was mad at him too. He said, "I've heard of all people, Perez was a little confrontational." He said, quote, "He's a grain of sand in this tour. He should be soft and kind, but he's like raising his voice." He said, "I'm done with it." And then maybe the most back, he got back to Mickelson at the end. And this is like, you know, you're talking about a guy that's been the captain for winning teams with Phil, played with Phil on teams. We're both vice captains for Stricker at this past year's Ryder Cup. "I don't think I'll ever talk to him again. What for? I'm not in the same boat as him anymore and probably never will play golf with him again. I'm not saying that to be mean. We're just in different orbits."
Wow.
I mean, that is for Fred Couples to come out and say that about Phil Mickelson. It's pretty strong. And as much as those young guys have defended the tour, the JTs, the Rorys, the Roms, and whatnot, I think it also helps for guys that are more peers of especially Phil saying these things. And a couple said, "Yeah, it's easy for me to say it. I don't have to make that choice." But obviously with what he's saying, it's clear what choice he would make. And that is to play golf that matters. And in his mind, even the lower level PGA Tour tournaments, the run of the mill PGA Tour tournaments, it still matters winning that for less money than it does winning this for more. I mean, I think that's exactly the point you were making.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares? What did you really gain outside of $3 extra million?
Yeah, it's.
It's just going to keep being a conversation, though.
Yeah.
Because here's the deal. More and more are going to keep going.
Yeah.
Who? Who would it take?
To keep me interested?
To get you interested.
There's only one guy.
Tiger?
Yes.
All right, everybody have a great Thursday. We'll be back tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way!